This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Cuts across the line, dropped it there for Hayes, moving in, shooting, stop, rebound, he scores! Lining the slot for Wheeler, moving in, Wheeler got hooked up, he manages to make it deep, shoots and scores! Bouncing toward the corner, out in front, Sherratt moving in, shoots and scores! He'll pull it off the wall, out in front of the shot, they score! That time Nikolaj Ehlers was expecting it. And it's 4-0 Winnipeg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Winnipeg Jets with a flurry of 4 first-period goals last night in Raleigh, North Carolina. You could even call it a surge by the Jets, leading to an absolutely dominant 8-1 victory. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of Jets talk, 3 hours of NHL discussion for you on this Saturday morning. The best way to reach us here is in studio. You can do that via Twitter. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. If we like what we read, we might even read it on air. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. I say good morning to Ezra. Good morning to David. Gentlemen, entering last night's game, the Carolina Hurricanes had been the second best team in the NHL since January 1st. I don't know that any of us saw an absolute 8-1 shellacking coming from a Winnipeg Jets team that had been struggling since the beginning of 2019.
Yeah, Drew, that wasn't a surge. That was a Friday night smackdown.
Mm.
That was a stone cold stunner.
Hulk Hogan leg drop?
Figure four leg lock. Okay. That was, you know, an RKO, everything combined. And, you know, you look at the Carolina Hurricanes last night, and that certainly did not look like a team that is currently in a wild card spot. And credit the Jets, because as you mentioned, you know, Kevin Hayes gets the ball rolling early on. Beautiful speed by Nikolaj Ehlers down the right wall. And, you know, Kevin Hayes gets his own rebound, and that line was terrific. Hayes, Ehlers, and Connor, of course. And I thought Connor probably could have had a hat trick last night, and he obviously gets the third period goal. But that was a game in which the Jets had all four lines going, and they didn't have that against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Against the Lightning, they were just outclassed, and you could really see that the Jets missed Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien. They were having trouble.
And Adam Lowry.
And Adam Lowry was really good last night as well, but you really saw it, I thought, in their breakouts and their ability to gain the zone and have offensive zone time. And that game was a little bit weird because in the second period, the Jets didn't have a shot, I think, until the 12-minute mark or the 13-minute mark, and it was still 4-0. Right. So the Carolina Hurricanes really, I thought, didn't have much of a pushback there in the second period. They had that power play, if you remember, in the second period. I think it was Jacob Trouba that took the penalty, if I'm not mistaken. And the Hurricanes, I don't even think, had a shot on net.
It was Lowry.
It was Lowry. Okay.
It was Lowry.
Lowry for the high sticking.
High sticking. There you go. And I actually thought that Aho got his stick up. I think that was the third period. The high sticking was the third period, wasn't it?
The high sticking was the third period.
On Trouba.
Lowry took a high sticking penalty in the third period. He also took a tripping penalty in the first period. It was Trouba for tripping in the second period.
Right, there you go. I knew I was going to get it eventually.
Yes. Okay.
And it looked like when Lowry took the high sticking penalty on the replay, it looked like Aho actually high sticked Lowry before that.
Yeah,
right?
he did.
So you could have had a double high sticking penalty. But the point is the Jets played an excellent game. It was really a solid game. You know, Lauren Brossoit almost picks up the shutout. He was really solid. He didn't have to steal the game. It wasn't like earlier in the season when he made those 42 saves, and you could argue that the Jets stole that game at home against the Hurricanes. The Jets were just clearly the better team. And what I liked most, guys, is their response, because it was a really disappointing loss to the Lightning. And I think everybody would agree that the Lightning were just the better team, and they're the better team on most nights, and the Jets didn't play their best. But last night, from start to finish, the Jets were just the better team. They were the faster team. And I think the biggest thing, and Kevin Sawyer talked about this with Dennis on the broadcast, it was the way they played as five-man groups, the back pressure. You hear about that a lot. But the way they played in the defensive zone, the way they transitioned into the offensive zone was the big key there. And going into Washington tomorrow, you know you're playing one of the best teams, the defending cup champs. You're going to have to bring your A game. So just a really nice bounce back game for the Jets, and they've been struggling over the last 2 or 3 weeks, so they needed that.
I think to me the most important part of the game was the fact that everybody had a piece of it,
regardless of whether you got a point or not, and I think only three players, I think Tanev, Shifley, and Nyku were the only players who didn't have any points in the game.
It's funny, you mentioned, sorry Dave, I'm going to interrupt you. You mentioned Shifley not having any points. When the Jets beat the Ducks and scored 9 goals, Shifley didn't get any points. They got 8 goals last night, he doesn't get any points. I mean, you would think that Mark Shifley, one of the most prolific scorers on the team, on a game where your team gets 8 goals or 9 goals, you'd think he'd be racking up the points. It wasn't the case.
Well, Ehlers was the only player that had more than 2 points. Ehlers had 3. You'd expect at least 3 or 4 guys to have 3 points, right?
Yeah, so score 8
a little
goals.
Weird in that sense.
Yeah, and I just think it was important for the team as a collective group. I mean, again, points don't necessarily dictate whether you're impactful, but I think to me it was a function of like Matthew Perreault getting involved, Andrew Kopp getting involved, Jack Roslovic getting involved. I think you had a total team effort. So as he talked about, the 5-man group, and I just think like from top to bottom yesterday, everybody had a piece of that game, and I think that's important. I think the Jets, Carolina really started the game pretty quickly, and, of course, that's where Lauren Brossoit, came up big, made a couple of nice saves to start the game, and then the Jets just took over. And, I mean, Patrick Laine is skating, and we saw him take that puck from the Jets zone deep into the Carolina zone, and, I mean, man, we're talking about Patrick Laine's goal scoring, but his passing has become very good. I mean, it really is, and he's getting more recognition for it now, because it seems to be doing a little bit more frequently, and maybe he's deferring to Wheeler and Shifley because of who he's playing with, but his passing is definitely a strength. I mean, it's you see it when he does, not necessarily just on plays which result in a goal, but every once in a while you'll see him do stuff where he passes it along behind the boards and it gets to Wheeler or whatnot. But I just thought it was very important for that total team effort for everybody to have a piece of that game. So and not to see the lag in the game either. I mean, I think the function is, you expected that second period to kind of be a little bit ho-hum, and you thought that Carolina would push back because it's in their building. They've got a lot of pride. They're 8-1-1 in their last 10 games, and they're a wild card team, but they were, just behind the Pittsburgh Penguins, who have third spot. So that there's basically four teams competing for 3 spots in the Eastern Conference. Carolina, of course, with Montreal, Columbus, and Pittsburgh. So you know how important these points are, and you're playing a team that, again, is coming off a defeat in Boston, and they have to, they need the points.
Yeah.
So
You thought they'd have more of an effort. I mean, you thought that this was going to be a good hockey game.
Yeah, and I just, again, like I said, I thought there was the opportunity for Carolina, not necessarily to get back. I mean, a 4-goal lead is a pretty big one in the NHL.
Sure.
But chip away at it. I mean, you get 1 or 2 goals in that second period, it makes it a lot different than if you're going down 4-0 or 5-0 into the third. And then when Andrew Kopp scores that goal late in that third period, in the second period, to give the Jets a 5-0 lead. Well, at that point, you're like, okay, well, this game is pretty much over. Of course, they would go on to score 3 more goals. But again, like I said, from the Jets' perspective, it's good. It gives them 2 wins of the 3 games in this road trip, and it gives them an opportunity to go into Washington, do some damage in a former Southeast Division rival, and end the road trip on a positive note.
Can we go back to how well Kyle Connor, Nikolaj Ehlers, and Kevin Hayes played last night? I mean,
that line is, since that line has been put together, they look like instant chemistry, that trio.
There was a sequence in the first period where it looked like the puck was on a rope and the Hurricanes just couldn't do anything about it. There's so much speed. You've got size with Kevin Hayes now, because obviously, Nikolaj Ehlers is not the biggest player. Kyle Connor's kind of average speed, not the heaviest guy, but Kevin Hayes gives that line some size at 6'5", 220 plus. And that line is really starting to click, because they've played, 5 games together now? Or 6 games.
Yeah.
And, they had some chemistry early on, but then there was a couple of games there where, they didn't have their best game. And last night, I thought they could have had a couple of more goals at the very least. Kyle Connor had a great chance, if you remember, point blank. Nikolaj Ehlers set him up in front of the net, and Curtis McElhinney made a big save, and then obviously he got the goal later in the third period. But that line to me was clicking. It looks so dangerous, and that is going to be the key in the playoffs for me. You know that Shifley and Wheeler and Laine right now, it looks like they're going to stick together for the foreseeable future. You know that that line's going to be dominant and dangerous, regardless if it's Laine or Connor or Ehlers. But that second line, I just don't see Paul Maurice breaking that up, Drew, because they've clicked so well, and there's so much speed on the wings, and you have a guy like Hayes who can shoot the puck, but he can also set up Ehlers or he can set up Connor. There's just so many dangerous options there, and I was really impressed. I thought that was the Jets' best line, and I was really impressed with. I thought Brian Little looked a lot more comfortable on the wing playing with Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry.
This is the forward group that Paul Maurice wants all together.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, and you've seen this forward group together really only for two games.
Yep.
Because Lowry was suspended and missed a couple games. So you saw him back last Friday against the Nashville Predators, and they put up, what, five goals on the Predators in that game? Coming back from that 2-0 deficit to getting five goals. They played together last night again, eight goals. I mean, the four lines that Paul Maurice is able to throw out there are just, so far, and it's only two games, admittedly, they are an offensive juggernaut so far. Line after line after line is just doing damage and playing the game in the right zone and on the right side of the puck, and they're doing everything that they want to see. And now that they're fully healthy up front, at least today, and who knows, we'll hear, you know, if there were any injuries coming out of the game last night. We'll find out in the third hour of the show when the Jets speak to the media and have their media availability in Washington. But, I mean, they're playing the way they want to play, and wait till their defense gets fully healthy again, and then you might be able to see this Winnipeg Jets team really start to turn into something as we head into the crunch time in the playoff race of the season.
Well, and that's also why I wasn't too concerned about the Tampa game. I mean, Tampa's just an unbelievable hockey team. But again, when you're not featuring Dustin Byfuglien, Josh Morrissey, and Adam Lowry, your lineup is not optimum. And so,
and when the Lightning is completely healthy,
that's what I mean. Right? Like, so you look at a Lightning team that's just firing on all cylinders, not losing, and you've got a Jets team that just doesn't have. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm making excuses for them, but the fact is that you're missing two of your top defenders and one of your shutdown forwards. So, I mean, that's a pretty significant blow to any roster. Now, you know, we talk about depth and the need for that. You know, again, this is an opportunity for guys like Parlin, Holman, and those types to get some opportunities to play and see, give the coaching staff an idea as to what they bring to the table. Because, of course, you know,
injuries happen.
So you want to be able to
all
know
hands
that.
On deck.
That's right. So again, and we're seeing that with the defense, and sometimes, you know, especially when you saw Tyler Myers take that shot, block that shot on his hand, he was in some pain.
Throws the glove off immediately.
Then he's got ice on, but he took a shift at right after that, played obviously the rest of the game. But it's just it's a function of the NHL, especially as you get deeper in the playoffs, that you're going to have to really rely on your depth. Well, so it's not a bad thing. The Jets are being tested, but it's just unfortunate that they're being tested against a team like Tampa. They were being tested against a team like Tampa.
I mean, you saw last night the Jets score eight goals. And to score eight goals all at even strength for a team that has had trouble 5-on-5 for a lot of the season, or that had been their knock on them for a lot of the season, is that 5-on-5.
One was a power play goal.
No, one was 4-on-4. Pardon me, Kyle Connor's goal
Kyle
was
Connors
a power,
was
play.
Power play.
Yeah, so you had six goals at 5-on-5, one at power play,
right.
And one in
yeah,
that.
The point is the majority of the goals were at 5-on-5.
Right. Yeah, David, if you're going to score six goals a game at 5-on-5, you're doing something right.
What about Alex Barkov last night?
Well, he had five assists for the Florida Panthers to defeat the Minnesota Wild.
Five assists on six goals.
Yeah, to defeat the Minnesota Wild, a Wild team that the night before had beaten the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Shut them out, didn't they?
Right, and...
Yeah, I think it was a 3-0 shutout.
And I think last night you saw how the Carolina Hurricanes can be exposed. They can be exposed by a fast, skilled team. And who would they match up against in the first round, potentially? Tampa. Well,
Tampa Bay. I mean, right. Washington.
So I think if they play Tampa Bay, that could be a very short series.
I mean, right now, I think it's the Carolina Hurricanes are a great story, and they're a fun story, and I hope they make the playoffs for the fans in Carolina who haven't seen a playoff game in almost a decade. So it'll be great if they make it there, but I think there is a limit and a cap to how successful they're going to be come playoff time. You know, it's only one game, and Nino Niederreiter has been a great addition to the Carolina Hurricanes team since coming over from the Minnesota Wild. But when your top line last night, I know plus minus is an antiquated stat, but Williams, Aho, and Niederreiter last night were a minus 15 combined.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that, though.
I'm not worried about it. I'm just saying that goes to show you just how dominant the Winnipeg Jets were / how poor the Carolina Hurricanes were last night.
Right, and you know, I didn't really like how the Hurricanes finished the game. And we talked about Kyle Connor's goal. That made it 16. It made it 6-1 just before the 14-minute mark. But to me, it was kind of similar to the way the Jets were against the Colorado Avalanche. I thought the Hurricanes were just not skating. Wow. And Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry get those two garbage goals to make it 8-1. And not, I don't mean garbage goals in that they weren't nice goals. I mean that The Hurricanes just weren't skating.
The Jets aren't trying to score at that point in time.
No.
Not immensely trying to score.
I thought that was embarrassing for the Hurricanes.
Well, you know, that to your point there, as I think Justin Williams addressed that post-game. This is his quote. "We addressed it a little bit after the game, but what happened in the first 10 minutes of the game and what happened in the last 3 minutes of the game was totally inexcusable. Something that, quite frankly, we're all ashamed of. Leaving our goaltender, who gives us his all the time, 3 late goals. It was chance after chance after chance. We all owe him an apology for that." That was Hurricanes captain Justin Williams.
Yeah, and, you know, how can you argue with that, right? And Rod Brind'Amour is not going to pull Curtis McElhinney out of the game at 6-1. The game's over.
Also, they have a back-to-back situation. They're in Nashville tonight.
Well, yeah, that too, Drew, but, you know, the game's over.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pull the goalie, you pull the goalie when it's 4-0 or you know, 5-1.
When the Jets score 3 goals on 8 shots.
Right. When they didn't pull him after
there's no
the
point.
Third.
There's absolutely no point. So, yeah. I mean, obviously, you let your goaltender, you hang him out to dry there.
Well, it seemed like it was clear that knowing that they were in a back-to-back situation, Rob Brind'Amour was just going to let Curtis McElhinney go all game long, no matter how shelled he was going to get, because they need Peter Mrazek, obviously, tonight to play in Nashville. It'll be interesting to see their response against the Predators team, of course, that is hungry and fighting with the Jets atop the Central Division.
Well, I think Justin Williams' comments were to motivate his team, obviously, for tonight. I think they know that they have to just leave that one behind. It was a garbage game. I was even surprised the Jets were still pushing when it was 7-1, and I thought to myself, okay, and then I saw Ehlers with the puck, and then he dished it off to Sherrod. I'm like, okay, he's probably not going to shoot because there's not that much time left. Then he takes a shot. I'm like, all right, and it goes in. I was like, all right, well.
One of those nights.
Yeah, exactly.
When we come back, we're going to discuss more on the Jets, some of their problems breaking out of their own zone and gaining the opposition zone. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
So he's not on the trip. He went back to get a new treatment, not as a change of course of action. It was something they thought they could do after a certain period of time. So he went back to get that taken care of.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about injured Jets defenseman Dustin Byfuglien. He had been on the trip, went back to Winnipeg. Don't call it a setback. Call it an additional treatment. I don't know.
That timeline is very vague.
Yeah.
Coach Maurice said the other day that he's going into his bunker mode where he's not sharing a lot with the media. So
he won't even confirm the starting goaltenders anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. This Byfuglien news is a little bit, I'm going to say, interesting. Far be it from me to play doctor, but.
Well, the timeline's always very vague. Like he said that, you know, originally he's like, I thought it was 1 to 3 weeks, and now we're, you know, getting up there. So, I mean, again, if you're the Jets and you're puttering along and you're, I mean, the problem is I would normally say, you know, you're fairly safe in your position, but based on the way the Central is tightened up, things aren't that safe. So,
well, and to bring him on the trip, because Byfuglien was on the trip and he had skated, I believe, before or after practice, you know, while on the trip, and then to send him home. I don't know. I'm going to read between the lines in there and say something that might not be 100% kosher.
Well, I mean, the only thing is that they have their whole medical team here.
Sure.
So, I mean, if you're at a certain point where, I mean, we don't know. I mean, you have to take them at their word, in quotes, because that's all we have. And so for right now, the understanding is that he went back to continue. I mean, that's what the
I'm sure
said.
He came back to, I'm sure he came back to do more treatment, but I'm skeptical about what the return date is, like you said, they very much still up in the air.
Buff's going to be okay. He'll be back soon.
Can we talk about your new haircut?
Let's just relax.
What about your new haircut?
I like my new haircut.
You got, I mean, there's gel, there's spikiness.
As riveting as the audience, I'm sure it finds that. Just to clarify what Maurice's words were exactly, he said,
you're going to cut off my haircut segment?
Sorry, yes. He went back to get a new treatment, not as a change of course of action. It was something that they thought they could do after a certain period of time. So he went back to get that taken care of. So, I mean, again, to be honest with you, it's entirely possible that they wanted him on the trip. He's a good personality. He's a guy that the players like having around. So, and I'm sure he didn't want to just sit around doing nothing. So they get him out there. He skates with the team. And then,
that's true.
You know, let's be realistic. I mean, these are NHL hockey players. It's not exactly a hardship to travel back to Winnipeg at any point in this trip.
Well, I think the most important thing for Buff is that you want him to get into some regular season games before the playoffs, right?
Definitely.
You don't want him out for the rest of March and early April. They have those 4 games on the road
to end the season.
I don't think you want it to get to that. You want Buff to get in some games at home before that road trip. So you hope that he's back in a week and a half, 2 weeks, you know, when there's six or seven games at the very least, right? Because there's only, what, 15 games left?
There are seven home games left, if I'm not mistaken. Right. There are the three this week where they have San Jose, Boston, and Calgary, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Then they're back out on the road for another three or four in a row. Then they're home again for another four, I think. And then they finish with that four-game road trip where they go.
So there's only two home stands left.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's
very interesting.
So the season's quickly
winding down. It's actually crazy
that
the season's almost over.
I know. The season is quickly winding down and playoff time
is soon upon us. My perfect attendance record will stay intact.
No Vegas trips planned.
Like, should we be playing like Green Day Good Riddance right now? I hope you have the time.
Anyways, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Interesting article published in The Athletic earlier this week by our buddy Murad Atesh, who, of course, covers the Jets and does a great job. And sort of the gist of the article was looking at sort of what are some of the Jets' problems at this point in the season with, as we said, about 15, 16 games to go, and how to get the Jets ready for the playoffs. And, you know, one of the big talking points all season long is that the Jets haven't been able to get zone entries and haven't been able to, so zone entries into the opponent's zone and clean zone exits out of their zone as easily this season as we saw last year. It hasn't been as smooth, it hasn't been as crisp, and it's been a lot of flip the puck out, hope and pray, and then maybe get a line change because the pressure in the Jet zone has been more significant this year than last. So he sort of identified that as an issue, and he got a lot of great comments on it from Jets players and from Jets head coach Paul Maurice. And I thought one quote in particular jumped out at me. This is what Paul Maurice had to say in the article. Quote, "Our rush defense was really strong last year, and it's not very strong this year," Maurice said. "You've got more offensive-minded young players that are more interested in hanging around in the offensive zone and not reloading because they never had to before, and they've scored a lot of goals." That's Jets head coach Paul Maurice, and you can sort of read between the lines, and he's talking about the younger guys, the Ehlers, the Laines, maybe even the Kyle Connors to some extent.
You don't have to read between the lines. That literally is in the line.
There you go. So I thought that was the quote that sort of jumped out at me about how maybe Paul Maurice is having a little bit of a struggle fighting against these young players and getting them to change their habits to get deeper into the defensive zone to lead to a quicker breakout.
Right, and you're right. And we had Murad on the show last week, and it's a great article. It's a three-part series, and you know it basically comes down to all of these, I guess, issues are related, right? The breakouts are related to the zone entries and the defensive zone coverage and coming back to support your defenseman on the breakout are all related to your breakout and your zone entries. And, you know, Andrew Kopp had some really insightful comments about having the forwards reload. And you mentioned, you know, the Jets defensemen need that support. And, you know, when you have that support, I think that's key, right? And you're able to transition up the ice quickly, right? And not having Nikolai Ehlers in the lineup and not having Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup has hurt them. And you saw that on the Jets' first goal yesterday. Nikolai Ehlers is able to take the puck up the ice, and it results in a Kevin Hayes goal just because, you know, Kevin Hayes is in the right position and Nikolai Ehlers' speed just backed off the Carolina Hurricanes. So when you're talking about, you know, the breakouts and the zone entries, it's easy to look at a game and say, oh, the Jets were really struggling in this game and they were really successful in this game. Because you look at the Tampa Bay game, and obviously there's different defensive strategies that teams employ. Mm-hmm. But it's all related. And, you know, the Jets have had some trouble with their possession and all of that. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't think that the Jets necessarily you know, have an issue with their zone entries or it's an issue that is going to cause them to not have any playoff success this year. I think it's a function of some of the players that they've been missing, mm-hmm. and also a function of not playing to your level and having some new faces in the lineup.
So you attribute, you'll say, growing pains to some extent, and injuries are more the cause of this than anything. Than anything else, that it can be rectified by the Jets getting Morrissey and Bufflin back in the lineup, and it can be rectified by the games matting, having more importance, so the players themselves might take an extra few steps, where if it was a mid-November game, they might be gliding rather than skating hard.
Yeah, well, the Jets were even having these problems with Morrissey in the lineup as well. It was really Ehlers and Bufflin. We talked about it. When you look at the Jets analytics, when Nikolai Ehlers and Dustin Bufflin were out of the lineup, their advanced stats just got progressively worse.
They fell off a cliff to some extent.
Right, and those are two really good possession drivers. Those are two players that bring the puck up the ice with speed through the neutral zone. They really help on the zone entry. So it's just an interesting exercise to look at.
The most fascinating part will be when they are fully healthy again. And, you know, with Bufflin, like we said, we were talking about it earlier, let's say end of this month, with, you know, Morrissey, let's say beginning of April. The Jets, when the Jets have their full complement of players, which they really haven't had a full complement of their team with Kevin Hayes, you know, at all this season, it'll be interesting to see what this team is entering the playoffs. I mean, do they become more of a juggernaut? Do they become more of a complete, well-rounded team that can control the play in all three zones, Dave?
I remember years ago, I took a look at how teams finish in their final 10 games and how that impacts whether they, you know, go on to win the Stanley Cup. And while it doesn't necessarily determine it, it definitely is going to, you know, hold you in good stead if your team is able to go on a bit of a run and you kind of get your collective group back. So, yeah, to your point, Drew, I think if you have Dustin Bufflin and you have Josh Morrissey, you don't need them for the remaining 15 games of the season, but you definitely want them for that those last four, five, or six, especially because, you know, we don't know if Paul Maurice is planning on resting some of his guys because, you know, we've seen him traditionally, the guys who have played all the games, mm-hmm. perhaps holding them out in game 82 or game 81. If they don't have any significance for the Jets, you could see him doing that. So, you know, you do want them back at a certain point because you know that you may not have your full complement in those final couple of games. So to the point, I just think that, like as he said, you know, that end of March, kind of beginning of April, especially because you might not have Josh Morrissey back. Mm-hmm. At least if you get Dustin Bufflin back, then you have a little bit more of that consistency you're looking for. Because that's really what it's about. You want to have that consistent lineup. And then you can say, this is who we are, as opposed to, oh, we're just a patchwork waiting for player X, Y, and Z to come back into the lineup.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway from this article is that when you're talking about the zone entries and the breakouts and the back pressure, everything is interdependent, mm-hmm. right? If one player isn't back, and Andrew Kopp talks about that and Ben Chiarot talked about that, it's talked about in this article, if one player isn't coming, if the forward isn't coming back, it makes it a lot more difficult on the breakout. And obviously, if you
have five-man units.
Right, if you have a defenseman jumping up into the play, it gives you another option when you're entering the zone. So everything is very interdependent. And, you know, the Jets have had some struggles in games, and that's part of the reason why they haven't had success. But in a game like yesterday, I mean, nobody's going to say that the Jets are having problems with their breakouts or on their zone entries, right?
An 8-1 victory does a lot to make you look good. When we come back, Ben Raby is going to join us. Ben is the Washington Capitals radio host. The Jets into the U.S. nation's capital tomorrow night to face the Capitals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. All over the Winnipeg Jets, 8-1 victors last night in Carolina. They head to Washington to meet the Capitals tomorrow evening. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Ben Raby. Ben is the Washington Capitals radio host. Ben, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate it.
Ben, obviously brought you on to talk about the Capitals ahead of the Jets' visit there tomorrow evening, what should be their only visit there unless there's a Stanley Cup final matchup between these two teams. The Capitals now atop the Metropolitan Division, having overtaken the New York Islanders. They've won 6 in a row, 8-2 in their last 10. Is this a Capitals team that looks to be rounding into form ahead of the playoffs?
I think it's a good way to word it. I think there's still some work to be done for the Capitals between now and the start of the postseason, but you could say they're starting to round into form, and it's interesting because it's not unlike what we saw last year at this time of year. It's easy to forget right now, but last year, January, February, Capitals had a rough stretch in their schedule. I'm talking about last year, and it really wasn't until after the trade deadline when they started to round their game back into shape, and they actually ended the season, the Capitals did, last year. They won 12 of their final 15 games, and that sort of propelled them en route to the deep postseason run that they enjoyed. And this year, it's similar timing. It is a six-game winning streak here since just before the trade deadline, but it's more than just the wins, fellas. It's kind of the way they're getting the wins. They've clamped down defensively. They're playing sort of just the eye test. They're not trading chances as much. It'll be interesting to see how they do tomorrow against, you know, the Jets, given I know their firepower. But for the most part, the Capitals of late during this six-game winning streak, they're sort of playing the quote-unquote right way, more of the playoff brand of style of hockey you would like to see come springtime. So I think that's one of the biggest takeaways of the six-game winning streak here.
Ben, earlier in your answer there, you mentioned the trade deadline, and the Capitals weren't one of the active teams at the trade deadline. They made a couple of, I guess you could call them, minor moves prior to the trade deadline, acquiring Nick Jensen from the Detroit Red Wings, and then they acquired Carl Hagelin from the LA Kings. How have those two players fit into the lineup here over the last month?
Yeah, Carl Hagelin's been, they've both been very impressive, but I'll highlight Hagelin in particular, because for years he was a thorn in the Capitals' side. They actually saw him, if you could believe this, six times in 7 years in the postseason between his years with the New York Rangers and then his three-plus seasons with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Capitals became plenty familiar with Carl Hagelin, and if you don't see him on a regular basis, I know he spent most of his career in the Eastern Conference, he may not fully register. He's a pest. He's a tough guy to play against. He uses the wheel. He's aggressive on the forecheck. He's maybe not a 25-goal scorer, that type of thing, but just a tough guy to play against as far as his ability to get on the forecheck. And speaking to a number of the Capitals defensemen who have gone up against him over the years, they've all acknowledged he's a pain in the behind to go up against. And the Capitals, over the past few weeks, feel they've reaped the benefits from his addition. It sort of has had a trickle-down effect. He's brought some energy, some speed to the lineup, and a penalty kill unit, which has struggled for a good chunk of this season. He's been a nice addition on a penalty kill unit, which since they acquired him, 22 for their last 25 in shorthanded situations, tackling a key cog on that PK unit. Just last night, fellas, they were 6-for-6 against the Devils. Granted, maybe not one of the superior power play units in the NHL in New Jersey, but the Capitals were shorthanded for nearly 12 minutes last night, of which Hagelin was on the ice for more than 8 minutes. So for 8-plus minutes from a forward to play shorthanded last night, it was another strong showing from Hagelin as far as that addition in shorthanded situations.
Ben, I have to ask you about Tom Wilson. He seems to be a player that other fan bases love to hate, but if he's on your team, you love him. He's having quite a remarkable season offensively, about to hit 20 goals for the first time in his career. He's 1 point off of his career high of matching it, what he had last year in 35 and 29 less games. So what's going right with him offensively this season?
Well, I think this has been trending sort of in this direction. We sort of started to see it midway through last season when it was Barry Trotz who put Tom Wilson on a line with, at the time, Nick Backstrom and Ovechkin. Primarily this year he's played with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin. But Barry Trotz last year, the team had had visions of this for Tom Wilson for years, that he could become a top six forward, potentially a top line right wing on the Capitals. And it took a few years for him to develop into that. I mean, going back years ago, he was a first round pick of the Capitals going back to 2012, and you're not often using your first-round pick to pick up a quote-unquote fourth-line grinder. He did start his career, obviously, a little bit lower down the depth chart and played sort of that you know, heavy, took care of those heavy responsibilities, if you will, and was more than willing to drop the gloves if it came to that. But all along, the Capitals felt they had something in Tom Wilson, some untapped offensive potential, if you will. And we started to see signs of it last year. He certainly took his game to another level last postseason. Capitals rewarded him in the offseason with a pretty lucrative six-year, $30 million contract. But he's lived up to it certainly this year. And even with that suspension to start the year, even with a brief injury in late November, you're right, he's on the verge of 20 goals now. He's sitting at 19 entering play tomorrow night. So the offensive side from Tom Wilson, Capitals always felt it was there. It was just a matter of kind of giving him the opportunity. And to his credit, he's taken advantage of it. Because I'll say this, fellas, it's not always easy playing with Backstrom and Ovechkin. Sounds like easy work if you could find it. But playing with two of the elite players, and you could throw Kuznetsov in there as well, who Wilson's played alongside, it takes a highly skilled player to be able to complement players like that. And Wilson is been able to handle that responsibility.
Ben Raby is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Capitals will do battle in the U.S. nation's capital tomorrow evening. Ben, in Ezzie's question, we addressed the addition of Nick Jensen to the Capitals lineup. Sort of a two-part question. One, why did the Capitals decide to sign him to that four-year extension really immediately upon acquiring him from Detroit? And then second of all, they have seven quality defensemen entering the playoffs. Seems like Christian Juice is going to be the odd man out right now. Is that justified in your mind? Has he been the weakest of the seven? And weakest probably isn't even the right word.
Yeah, well, I guess you could say issue or potential thing that came up with Christian Juice is he had a serious injury earlier this year, and he just came back in February, and the Capitals were actually collectively surprised, and on a positive side, they were pleasantly surprised with how quickly he was able to come back from his injury, a little bit of an unorthodox ailment, and he had to undergo thigh surgery in November. And he came back maybe a little bit quicker than expected. And I think as a result of having missed that time and given the severity of the injury, there were some hiccups when he came back, you could say, in mid-February. And I think the idea of bringing in Nick Jensen, certainly for insurance this year, was high on the priority list, whether it was going to be Nick Jensen or another defenseman. I think they did want to shore up the blue line. I could tell you it's the fifth year for Brian McClellan as the general manager. He has acquired a defenseman at each of the five deadlines, so we weren't totally surprised that a blue liner came in. We saw last year with the addition of Michael Kempney, a little bit under the radar, made a terrific difference in the postseason. And Jensen, not only did they bring him in, but to your point, they signed him to that long-term deal, a four-year extension. I think it was really, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It was part of the deal. I mean, they weren't going to send Madison Bowie in a second-round pick to Detroit unless they had the reassurance that they were going to sign Nick Jensen to an extension. And just a guy who they see in Nick Jensen, who was playing upwards of 20 minutes a night in Detroit, someone who they feel also has a little bit of a higher ceiling potentially in Washington, starting out now as a third pair, but wouldn't be surprised if as early as next season or maybe even this spring he cracks the top four here.
Ben, there aren't a lot of glaring weaknesses on this Capitals team. The one weakness that has been pointed out by some is the backup goaltending. And when you look at last year's team, Philip Grubauer was obviously the starting goaltender for the Capitals the first couple of games. Then Braden Holtby came in, and obviously the rest is history. The Caps won their first ever Stanley Cup. But when you look at Phoenix Copley, are the Capitals at all concerned if something happens to Braden Holtby and they have to turn to Phoenix Copley? Or are they not as concerned because even though he doesn't have any NHL playoff experience, he does have some playoff experience in the American Hockey League?
Yeah, I think it's been a little up and down for Phoenix Copley this year. I'll say this, it's very hard to replace Philip Grubauer. Capitals were spoiled to an extent last season. He was arguably, and I think quietly, in the conversation as the best backup goalie across the league last year, talking about Philip Grubauer, and obviously they couldn't afford him and ultimately had to trade him and move on. As far as Phoenix Copley, when I say it's been an up and down season, he's shown flashes. Holtby was injured earlier this year. In fact, when the Capitals were in Winnipeg in November, Capitals were in the middle of a four-game trip, and Phoenix Copley started all four, and I believe he went 3-1 on that road trip. The Winnipeg game may have been the lone defeat in that stretch. But when he's had an opportunity at times, Phoenix Copley has been able to handle the load. They actually rewarded him with a three-year extension, so obviously they do have confidence in him long-term. That being said, I would say since the All-Star break, since the bye week, that consistency hasn't necessarily been there like we saw earlier in the year, whereas for Braden Holtby, it has. And we were actually surprised, fellas, that last night against New Jersey, Capitals don't have too many back-to-backs upcoming. We thought last night against the Devils was an opportunity to give Phoenix Copley a rare start at home, and they went with Holtby. Obviously, it was the right decision with a 25-save shutout, but I think you're going to see a lot of Braden Holtby here down the stretch with 15 or so games left in the season. Probably going to be Holtby quite a bit, again, with very few back-to-backs between now and the start of the playoffs.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Washington Capitals radio host, Ben Raby.
Ben, we're hearing so much about this being a young man's league, but at 33 years of age, Alexander Ovechkin is leading the NHL in scoring. He doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon. He's positioned to win the Rocket Richard this year. What is going right for a guy who partied as long as he did into the summer?
Yeah, that's what surprised me the most, not the party so hard in the summer, but the fact you brought it up at the start there, the age, and it's the quote-unquote young man's game. And I'll tell you guys, 2 years ago, Ovechkin in the 16-17 season had, and I put this in air quotes, but he had only 33 goals. Great season for most, but, you know, below that very high standard that he set for himself. And only 16 of those were at even strength. He ranked 67th in the league with 16 even strength goals, talking about 2 years ago. And there was a very cognizant effort and acknowledgement by management and in conversations with Alex Ovechkin after that 16-17 campaign that, look, the power play goals are seemingly always going to be there for you. You could wind up for that one-timer from the left face-off circle. You're going to get 15 to 20 goals a year from there. We know that. We got to get you back to what you had maybe earlier in your career at even strength. You got to get the wheels moving. You got to get that speed game back. It's a young man's game, like you just pointed out. And Ovechkin was, I don't want to over-dramatize and say he was at a crossroads in his career, but it was at a point where his even strength productivity was definitely going in the wrong direction. And since that offseason, since offseason 2017, when he made changes in his training regimen, he put more of an emphasis on conditioning and speed as opposed to just brute strength and weightlifting and physical training, that type of thing. There's been a noticeable difference, not only in the volume of goals he's scoring, guys, but in the way he's scoring them, scoring more at even strength. He leads the league this year. I referenced he ranked 67th 2 years ago in even strength markers. He's tops in the league this year, not only in total goals, but in even strength markers, which I think is really the point that should be emphasized. It's the even strength markers. It's the way he's scoring. He's getting goals off the rush, sort of what he was doing earlier in the decade, earlier in his career. And the fact that he is doing it at age 33 in his 14th season, I think is, you know, arguably one of the most impressive things with how he's doing it at this stage of his career.
Ben, sticking with goal scoring, Andre Burakovsky's got a three-game goal scoring streak going right now, and he was a player that earlier in the season was the subject of trade rumors. Some teams were sniffing around on Andre Burakovsky. What have you seen from him as of late? Because this is a player who I think you'd agree has been a streaky goal scorer in his early NHL career.
Yeah, and if we all saw those reports and rumors, you know, they could say that they don't pay attention to that, but he's even acknowledged he knew his name was on those trade boards, and it was an uneasy month of February for him. I'm sure it was an uneasy most of this season because, truthfully, he hasn't lived up to expectations this year. Andre Burakovsky's a guy who, over the past few years, they've envisioned potentially as a 20-goal scorer. He's really been passed over on the depth chart here by Jacob Vrana, another young player who himself is on the verge of 20 goals this year. So he hasn't necessarily lived up to expectations, Burakovsky, but certainly since the trade deadline passed, he's acknowledged. There was a big sigh of relief when the trade deadline came and went and he was still here in Washington, and his play has sort of taken off since then. I think the confidence has sort of been lifted as a result. There was sort of this cloud or this weight that's been lifted off his shoulders, and to your point, goals in three straight games, and you know, even the addition of Carl Hagelin, I think, has helped Andre Burakovsky to an extent. It's maybe not the easiest thing for Burakovsky, but truthfully, with Hagelin here, Burakovsky moved down the depth chart a little bit, and, you know, maybe some more favorable matchups he's been able to take advantage of as a result. But, yeah, goals in three straight. I think he's up to 7 points in his last nine. So, certainly, he's been playing well of late, and Capitals are going to need more of that down the stretch here.
Ben Raby is the Washington Capitals radio host. The Jets into Washington to face the Capitals tomorrow evening. Ben, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yep, thank you, fellas. Thank you.
Take care. Ben Raby, Washington Capitals radio host, our guest. When we come back, we preview more on the Jets versus the Capitals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Madison Bowie gets bumped there by Lowry, and here comes Sherratt. Sherratt with a wrister. Scores! Ben Sherratt after Adam Lowry forces a turnover at center. Third of the year for Ben Sherratt, and the Jets have a 2-1 lead.
That was back in November. The Winnipeg Jets defeated the Washington Capitals by a 3-1 margin. Ben Sherratt with the game-winning goal. Kyle Connor into an empty net with a minute to go to seal the victory. The Jets defeating the Washington Capitals back in November. The rematch goes tomorrow evening in Washington. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com. Check them out in person in the Cordon Village Mall. That's the corner of Cordon and Lanark. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. The Jets and the Capitals, obviously the Capitals are, like I said, with Ben Raby, as we mentioned, they seem to be rounding into form as they are back atop the Metropolitan Division in the Eastern Conference. I would expect that they're going to stay there. And I got to say, the Capitals to me are a team that's a little under the radar. They're not getting the headlines of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who clinched a playoff spot last night. They're not getting the headlines of the Boston Bruins, who just rack up point after point after point after point.
18 in a row.
Points in 18 straight games, which is absolutely a remarkable streak.
Sorry, as a quick interruption, Drew. It's amazing that they can't even catch Tampa. Like, it just goes to show you, it's crazy how Boston has gone on this incredible run. They're still 15 points back of Tampa.
Well, when you clinch a playoff spot on March 8th.
I know. They're like, Tampa could become the first team. I'm like, and no other team is going to do it for at least two more months
in the season.
Yeah. I saw that that tweet. I'm like, they clinched a playoff spot? Did I wake up 3 weeks into the future? In any event, I think the Capitals, to me, guys, and please express your opinion on this, seem to me that they're just sort of happily under the radar. Nobody's talking about them. They're the defending Stanley Cup champions. They seem to have as good of a roster, with maybe the exception of backup goaltender, as you mentioned there, Ezzy, in your question to Ben Raby. The Capitals seem like they should be, from my perspective, the team that emerges from the Metropolitan Division.
Right, and hopefully they don't play the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, but I would love to see that as a fan. But yeah, why wouldn't you think that they're a contender for the Stanley Cup, right? It's essentially the same team as last year, right? We talked about it. I mean, the only additions were Nick Jensen and Carl Hagelin. And I mean, those are significant additions because they're depth pieces. But when you're talking about the core of the team, Alex Ovechkin, Nicholas Backstrom, TJ Oshie, John Carlson, Dmitry Orlov, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Braden Holtby, your number one goaltender. I mean, it's the same core as it was last year. And it's still a very dangerous team. Now, am I a little bit concerned about the backup goaltender situation? I think I'm probably a little bit more concerned if Braden Holtby sustains a serious injury.
Sure.
You can probably say
that for every playoff team.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't be as concerned with a team like the Winnipeg Jets, for example, or the Nashville Predators.
Fair enough. That's a valid point.
I mean, Lauren Brossoit had a better year than Phoenix Copley, and UC Saros is obviously, arguably, I should say, the best backup in the NHL.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are teams that have better backups than the Capitals, but hopefully we're not talking about this come playoff time and Braden Holtby's healthy. But I'm just saying, especially in the first round, and injuries do happen, boys. That's all I'm saying. That would probably be the only weakness. They're a very dangerous offensive team. And, you know, to your point about flying under the radar, to me, what I don't think gets talked about enough is how good of a defensive team they are. It's a very good defensive team, and they don't give you a lot. It's a fast team, but it's also a tough team to play against. And say whatever you want about Tom Wilson, he's got 19 goals. And this is a guy who missed 14 games at the beginning of the season with the suspension, right? So Tom Wilson is not just a complimentary piece. This is a guy that he could score 25 goals this year. He's a really good player, and obviously he helps their forecheck game and their physical game and all of that, but it's just a very well-rounded team. And whether or not you think Tampa Bay Lightning is just going to breeze right through to the Stanley Cup final, Washington is going to have something to say for that. Whoever they end up playing in the first round is going to have their hands full. Whenever you have to stop guys like Ovechkin and Backstrom and Kuznetsov and Oshie and John Carlson on the back end, I mean, they just have so many weapons. There aren't many teams that are able to shut them down in a seven-game series. That's why they won the Cup last year.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because to me, and I could be wrong, but I feel like we had a conversation leading up to the playoffs last year where we asked, are the Capitals happy being a team that not a lot of people are talking about?
Sounds familiar.
I feel like we had that conversation either with a guest amongst ourselves, or I think specifically with a guest from, it could have even been Ben Raby.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact is that I feel like we had that conversation last year about this team. And again, I like teams that don't make major moves. I mean, the Jets made a lot of moves. They added a lot of depth pieces, not major moves in terms of, Well, Kevin Hayes is a pretty big move, but
they didn't take a player off their active roster, right, with the exception of Brandon Lemieux.
Right. And so to me, the fact is that, you know, I like it when teams try and make a minimal move, especially with a team like the Capitals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tampa Bay, don't get me wrong, I mean, they're phenomenal, but we've seen traditionally, I think in the last 32 years, I think only 8 teams that have won the President's Trophy have gone on to win the Stanley Cup.
The Lightning were tremendous last year as well. And then what happened is they went into the Eastern Conference Final and they played against the Washington Capitals. And sure, the Capitals, you know, were feeling good about themselves because they were sort of the dark horse who had made a run to the Cup Final, to the Eastern Finals, and then obviously winning the Stanley Cup eventually. But, you know, again, if you're the Lightning, the team I think you probably want to avoid the most is the Washington Capitals out of the Metropolitan Division.
Right, but I think from the Lightning's perspective, I don't think they would. They have to have a mentality of they've got that chip on their shoulder.
Sure.
They did as well as they did, and we talked about it when the Jets were setting up to play Tampa, that this is a Tampa team that has a chip on its shoulder, knows that what they did last year, isn't satisfied with just being the best team in the NHL during the regular season. They're not going to put up a big banner that says we're the best team in the regular season, mm-hmm, a la Nashville. I think that their focus is on winning the Stanley Cup, and they stood pat. They didn't make any moves at the deadline for a reason. This is a team that they want to win with. And again, I get it, but I just think, like, from the Capitals' perspective, you know, playing that desperate hockey and making sure that you're that first place team, there's something to be said for that. We'll see. It'll be very interesting in the Eastern Conference.
The biggest thing for me, Dave, is that now that the Capitals have got past the Pittsburgh Penguins out of the second round, mm-hmm, they just couldn't do that. Year after year, they ran into the Penguins in the second round. Now they've done that. I think all the pressure is off them. There's no pressure on them.
Sure, they already won the Stanley Cup.
They've won their Stanley Cup. They've defeated the Pittsburgh Penguins. They finally got that monkey off their back. Remember, that was the big thing. The Pittsburgh Penguins were the big monkey on the Washington Capitals' back. Well, now that monkey's off the back, mm-hmm, and now all they have to do is there's no pressure to repeat. I really don't think that there is any pressure because they've had, generally speaking, a pretty good regular season. Not as good as the Tampa Bay Lightning, but they've been right up there with the other teams in the Metro Division. No pressure on them, and they're playing really well right now, 6 wins in a row. And I agree. I don't think you want to play this team in the playoffs. This is the team. They're the gold standard.
Yeah.
I don't think the Tampa Bay Lightning are the gold standard because they've only done it in the regular season.
So you beat the King, all hail the King, with the Jets and the Capitals tomorrow night, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back from scoutingtherefs.com, Josh Smith is going to join us. We'll talk about some of the proposed rule changes and everything about officiating in and around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To talk about some of the NHL's proposed rule changes and to take a peek at the officiating side of the game, we're pleased to be joined by Josh Smith from scoutingtherefs.com. Josh, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Josh. Thanks for joining us Saturday morning here. You know, Josh, I want to start, and we'll get to some of the proposed rule changes from the general managers' meetings, but I want to start with some of the comments from Devin Dubnyk of the Minnesota Wild earlier this week, where there were 2 straight shootout goals scored by Ryan Johansson, 1 against Alex Stalock and 1 against Devin Dubnyk himself. And both times, Dubnyk disagreed with the call on the ice and thought that Johansson had committed a impermissible move that should have disallowed the shootout goals. From your perspective, were the officials in the right, or was Devin Dubnyk in the right?
You know, I understand Dubnyk's frustration, especially, you know, as you're getting towards the playoffs and teams that are on the bubble and things like that. It's a tough one for the officials. There's a rule book specifically says the puck is to continue moving towards the goal. And I think really, unless you stop or draw back the other way, they're really not going to wave one off when it's close like that. It could be argued whether or not he came to a stop, but it looked like his general progress was towards the goal. So I can completely understand why the referees allowed that one.
Josh, we want to go over some of these proposed rule changes, like Drew said, and I wanted to start off with maybe the most obvious one. That's if you lose your helmet, you have to go off the ice. This is something that we've seen in international hockey, and it's a little bit different in the American Hockey League. You have the ability to put your helmet back on, but is this just common sense that the NHL is going to introduce this in theory starting next season?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, you don't want a quick whistle. You don't want to stop play when a guy loses his helmet. At the same time, you don't want anybody getting hurt out there. So I can absolutely understand why they might want to. You know, people argue that no one has been hurt, or, you know, it's fun when guys lose their lids. But you don't want to see any injuries happen, especially to a superstar. So I think it makes a lot of sense from a safety standpoint. You know, I don't think there's a lot you're losing from doing something like that, of having a guy just go off for a change when he loses his bucket.
You know, Josh, when you're in an NHL building and they go to video review and on the Jumbotron, they start playing the clocks. It drives fans nuts because sometimes it takes a long time. Now they're considering maybe including the referees and some more video review. Do you think that's a good idea?
I think anytime you can get the officials' input, it's a good idea. Just to have them weigh in, have their feedback on the situation, what they saw on the ice, how things went. So I'm in favor of it. You know, I know their thought is that the decision is still going to sit with Toronto. It'll just be the officials weighing in or providing some additional feedback there, but that, you know, they won't be the ultimate decision makers. Still, always good to have a voice in the room. I know the Situation Room recently added retired officials to those that are looking at the offsides and goaltender interference reviews. So, you know, anytime you can get a ref or a former ref to have a voice in the discussion, it's a good thing.
Josh Smith from ScoutingTheRefs.com is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290, talking about the officiating side of the game. Josh, on Tuesday night, New York Rangers center Mika Zibanejad was ejected for boarding Radek Faksa of the Dallas Stars. After the game, the game misconduct was rescinded from by the NHL, wiping it from Zibanejad's record. I want to ask about the official in that instance. Obviously, the NHL deemed that he made an incorrect call. What sort of evaluation does a referee go through throughout the course of the season that an incorrect call in this nature might impact their playoff assignments or their future as an NFL, as an NHL official?
Well, of course, every game is reviewed, monitored, and discussed with the officials by an officiating supervisor. So there's constant feedback and evaluation there. There's no question they talked about it after the game. In this case, you know, some of them are more obvious of a missed call or a bad call than others. In situations like this, you know, you could see where the call was made because of what they felt happened on the play, or, you know, what the official saw at the time of the call, that obviously after review you can say it was a different situation than how the referee perceived it. That's going to weigh in or factor differently than what would be like a truly missed or blown call. But certainly it's constant evaluation. We never get feedback, but they get constant feedback in coaching. The only thing we can go by is who makes the playoffs and who doesn't. But, you know, it would certainly be a factor. I'd have to say in this case, with the way the call was, you know, the league was more worried about getting it right, especially as it comes to how misconduct penalties can accumulate and create an automatic suspension for Zibanejad, that while it didn't change the game, it wasn't warranted for future discipline, which is why they rescinded it. But yeah, there's no doubt a conversation about that call.
To that point, Josh, how many officials, how many regular season officials don't get playoff assignments?
Oh, we're looking, you know, when the opening round goes, you're dropping about 10 to 12 of the full-time guys, and then you're, you know, cutting from there on out. So, you know, you've got four for the cup final, you've got eight before that, and 16. So, you know, it's pretty severe cuts, and from an officiating standpoint, it's a pretty big bonus to move on. They're making between $18,000 and $20,000 a round for moving on. So there's huge incentive for them to make sure that, you know, they're getting the calls right, and they're one of the top officials who gets selected for the playoffs and to move forward.
Josh, just going back to some of those proposed changes from the NHL GM meetings earlier this week, clocks in the corners, clocks in the end board corners. It's something that was proposed, and it looks like the NHL and the competition committee, the board of governors, are going to accept. Obviously, is that something that you think is just common sense and good? And is that something that can benefit the referees and the officials just as much as the players?
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I mean, there's no real downside to doing it other than maybe a little loss of some ad space for the league. You know, just to know what the time is on the clock. I think the officials will more be focused on the play and on the puck, but you know, when you look at the trailing ref or the, you know, the linesman that can keep an eye on what's going on in the zone as well as glance down at the clock, I think it can only be helpful. I think the greater benefits for the players, but, you know, no doubt the more information people have on situations, the better it is.
You know, Josh, yesterday was International Women's Day, and I'm curious to know your thoughts on the idea of a woman being a official in the NHL and at what point we may see something like that.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of time until that happens. I think, you know, we've seen at the All-Star Game that skating's not an issue for women versus men, and that's probably for an official, other than their judgment, one of the greatest factors on whether or not we'd see a female official in the league. So by... you know, by that standpoint, I think it's really just a matter of time. Katie Guay, who recently did the Beanpot in Boston, had some good comments about just finding opportunities for female officials to work their way up, you know, working at ECHL or the AHL. And I think as those opportunities come, it's really just a matter of time. I know a lot of people are concerned about the size difference and physicality. And, you know, certainly your linesmen are bigger because they're breaking up scraps. But, you know, from a refereeing standpoint, you take somebody like Kelly Sutherland, who's not a big guy, and, you know, he's been great out there, one of the league's top officials. There's no reason to think that a female ref couldn't do the same thing.
Josh, we wanted to get your opinion on the recent player safety summit that took place down in Florida. There were 14 different hockey associations officials were represented. Stephen Wacom, the NHL director of officiating, was down there, I guess. What was your big takeaway from this? And is this something that you'd like to see more regularly, whether that's once a year or twice a year?
I think we've seen what the league's done with the competition committee and using them when it comes to rule changes and things like that. And I think having a player safety summit is a terrific idea. One of the things to me is just level setting across the board on that everyone's on the same page with, you know, what should be called, what shouldn't be called, how should these be handled. And, you know, you've really got to take that proactive approach towards player safety. And, you know, I think this is a good step to doing it. I think if you can go even further to make sure, you know, across the board at different levels and leagues that we're all looking at the same thing and that everyone's on the same page with how they're handling it. I think it's good for the players and it's good for the officials, too, to know what the standards would be.
Last question for you, Josh. Josh Smith of ScoutingTheRefs.com is our guest on the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. There was a proposed rule change that'll make it a penalty for a player to engage in a fight with a combatant who is both unwilling and or unsuspecting. It's the unwilling part that is the new wording. Obviously, it's a penalty to fight somebody who's unsuspecting right now, but unwilling is what the NHL is proposing to add to that as well, meaning a guy who's not interested in fighting a guy like Tom Wilson or not interested in fighting a guy like Ryan Reeves. It'll become a subject of supplemental discipline if those guys fight somebody. What are your thoughts on that rule change, and is this something that is really just another way to almost eliminate some additional fighting from the game of hockey?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. You're getting rid of some of the additional fighting, but you're really getting rid of the guys who are going after guys. You know, the league's been tough about calling instigator penalties, and it is in the rule book. You know, we've certainly got the option to call an instigator, and it doesn't happen that often. It's something like this where it's just more ammunition for the officials to be able to assess penalties to somebody who maybe wasn't ready to go, wasn't willing to go. I think the biggest concern is watching those guys, and we all know that they're out there, and we all know who they might be, but watching the guys who take advantage of this and go to start a scrap only to, you know, then back away and decide to not drop the gloves. And that's something where, you know, I think you just want to make sure somebody's not instigating, starting a fight, and then trying to be an unwilling combatant just so that they can take advantage of it and, you know, get a power play out of it.
Josh Smith is with ScoutingTheRefs.com. Josh, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much, guys.
Take care. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Winnipeg Jets penalty kill. It's been pretty bad as of late. We talk about that and what ails the Jets. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Back up top for Hedman. Near side, Stamkos, slap shot, they score. Deflected in front, off the post and in. 3-1 Tampa on a power play goal. Onto the far side for Stamkos. Stamkos out in front, and a shot, they score. Great point, tic-tac-toe. It's a power play goal, and it's 5-1 Tampa.
those two Tampa Bay Lightning power play goals from Tuesday night, the Lightning with a pretty good power play, the Jets with not a great penalty kill, especially since the 1st of January. Since that time, the Jets are 29th in the NHL with a penalty kill percentage of 74.5%. The only teams worse are the Edmonton Oilers and the Chicago Blackhawks. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Amaro Zappia of Zappia a Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, gentlemen, as I mentioned, the Jets penalty kill, 29th since the calendar flipped to 2019. Overall, 25th in the NHL this season. From your perspectives, from your educated perches, what is the reason for the Winnipeg Jets' struggles on the penalty kill?
You know, it's really surprising to me that the Jets have the 25th ranked PK in the league, because the personnel that they have out there, in my opinion, is good. I mean, you're talking about Adam Lowry, you're talking about Brandon Tanev, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler are a pair on the back end. You've got Josh Morrissey and Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler as a pair of forwards. You've got Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. You've got Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien. Obviously, Buff has missed 25 plus games this year, but you've got good personnel out there. And to me, what's really shocking is the Jets are actually close to top 10 in the league when you talk about road PK. They're 12th in the NHL on the road when it comes to their PK.
So it's a problem at home.
It's actually been better on the road. You'd expect it to be better. The power play's been better at home. Just one of those kind of
anomalies.
Differences between the road and home. So, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I have all the answers, Drew, because when you talk about, you know, the penalty kill and the Jets are a top team. They're first place in the Central Division. What is wrong with the penalty kill? What's everyone going to say, right? It's that they're maybe too passive. That's been an argument or a concern with the Jets' penalty kill now going on 2+ years, right? That the Jets give up too many of those shots, but that's a strategy that they've employed. Now, the Jets have scored some shorthanded goals this year. We've seen, you know, Brandon Tanev. We've seen Mark Scheifele. We've seen Blake Wheeler score shorthanded goals. I mean, they have the ability to counter punch. But do they play a little bit too passive sometimes? Yes, that's what I would point out to sometimes with the Jets' penalty kill, that they allow that shot from the point, or I should say more so the right top circle, maybe a little bit too much. We saw that in the game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, but when it's Steven Stamkos, how many goaltenders are stopping that shot when it's connected on perfectly, right? So that would probably be my comment, that at times maybe the Jets give a little bit too much space to the defenseman. Unless you guys have something else that you'd like to throw in, it is a little bit surprising. Again, I don't think that, you know, this is going to mean that the Jets can't win a playoff round, but when you're able to put out talented players, talented checkers like Adam Lowry and like Brandon Tanev, and really talented playmakers like Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and other players go out there for the penalty kill. Kevin Hayes has the ability to go out there now. Andrew Kopp kills penalties as well when you're talking about forwards. So it is surprising that they're bottom five, and it is something that you have to be concerned about, because we know how important the power play can be in the playoffs. It can be the difference in a game and a series.
Yeah, and this is a Jets team that was ninth overall last season in their in their penalty kill. They were the fifth best power play. So, I mean, with largely the same personnel, you've got a power play that's still lethal in the NHL, but you've got a penalty kill, obviously, that's slipped considerably. It's funny, it's only a 3-point percentage difference, but clearly that's significant enough to drop them, 16 spots in the rankings between one calendar year and the other. So, no, I think Ezzie's right. I think it's a function of perhaps they're playing a little passive. They're allowing the other teams to gain access to the zone a little bit easier than they had last year, but you know, again, it just goes to show you the importance of a guy like Dustin Byfuglien, who can really, you know, change the way a team is, the way they come into the zone. Like, everything about Dustin Byfuglien's game is impactful. and in every sense of that word. So I think, so you probably do miss him there. You know, I don't love the idea of using Wheeler and Scheifele. I think you burn them out a little bit by using them on the penalty kill. I think that's why you get other guys like Kevin Hayes. You got Andrew Kopp. You got Lowry. You got Tanev. But, you know, obviously we can see what talented guys can do with the puck. They can get it out of the zone in a tight spot. So, and obviously the counterattack is effective when you have guys like Scheifele and Wheeler to go on. And I think the Jets are, what, tied now for the NHL lead with shorthanded, or maybe they sit behind Arizona for shorthanded goals. So, you know, they're a team that has the explosive firepower. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely something you want to tweak because, again, it's another facet of the game. We obviously know that in the playoffs, penalties aren't called as often as they are called in the regular season. But at the same time, you know, if you're giving up those goals, they're just that much more critical. So I think, it comes down to having your personnel healthy. You know, Josh Morrissey, another guy who we, you know, don't have to talk about how effective he is at handling, controlling play. So you have Josh Morrissey back. You have Dustin Byfuglien back. You know, again, we'll see how this team is able to handle and adjust.
Yeah, and my other comment on the penalty kill would be, you're talking about the Jets being at 78.6%. An average penalty kill in the NHL is between 80 and 81%. So if the Jets kill off all of the penalties in two or three straight games, they move very close to the middle of the pack. And the Jets have fluctuated this season. They've been towards the middle of the pack when you talk about penalty kill. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about 78.6% versus a mean of, let's say, 80.5% or 81%, mm-hmm. I mean, yes, they have struggled at times on the penalty kill, but also I think when you talk about, you know, one or two games, if you give up two or three power play goals against a team, I mean, your penalty kill percentage goes down 1.5%, right? So I think that's something to look at. But think about what we're talking about here: 78.5%.
Sure, you're not
versus 80%. And if you, like I said, you kill some penalties off against the Carolina Hurricanes, they killed all the penalties off yesterday. I think there was three.
Mm-hmm.
So the penalty kill was pretty good last night, right? So I'm a little bit concerned. But as I mentioned, on the road, they're 12th in the NHL. Well, right, it's really at home where they've struggled, and that's brought the whole average down.
If you remember last year, with the Jets' penalty kill was always giving up a lot of shots, and a lot of the people, the analytics said that, you know, their penalty kill is going to have to collapse because they're giving up so many shots. And the counterpoint to that is the Jets are not giving up the shots from the
high danger
areas. Mm-hmm. They're all right. Shots from the outside, and they're all shots, you know, that should be saved more often than not. And that was the sort of the penalty kill strategy, was take everything that's high danger away, give them the outside, and rely on your goaltending. And so the goaltending hasn't been as good as it was last season. And, you know, a couple more, to Ezzie's point, you know, a couple goals go in here, a couple goals go in there from areas that were not high danger chances. And all of a sudden it causes your percentages to drop significantly into the bottom five of the NHL.
Yeah, but at the same time, to Ezzie's point, if the fact is that, you know, we've seen how effective the Jets have been at home. So, I mean, of course, giving up, you never want to give up goals, but you can probably afford to do it at Bell MTS Place, where you know you've played as well as any team in the NHL has played in their home barn. Mm-hmm. So you've got a team, again, I'm not saying that just because you have a problem, you can ignore it because you have other attributes that are outweighing it. But I'm saying that you being in the middle point of the league, midpoint of the league, or a little bit above that, sorry, on the road is probably better for a team like the Jets, who, you know, again, like I said, are as good as they are at home.
Right, and you know, another point too, the power plays have never been better in the NHL. We know how dangerous the Jets' power play is.
Sure.
And, you know, it comes down to coaching. I mean, coaches probably focus more on the special teams than we think. They obviously are concerned about how the teams are playing at 5-on-5 too, but power plays, penalty kills have a big impact on games, not only during the regular season, but especially in the playoffs when matchups are even more important, right? So when you're playing a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, I mean, you can strategize all you want. It's really tough to stop a power play that features Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Braden Point, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, that shot by Stamkos is unstoppable when it goes bar down like that, like it did the other night, right? So the penalty kill, it's not perfect. It's not necessarily top 10, but I don't know. I don't think that there's anything structurally wrong with it. I really don't, and that's just my opinion, but look at the personnel out there.
Sure.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with you, Dave. I like Scheifele and Wheeler out there because their ability to counterpunch, we've seen that before.
Yeah, I agree with you. To me, it's more a function of timing. You're already burning those guys out, and you're playing them a lot.
Yeah, they're on the power play.
That's what I'm saying. So I just think, like, you already play the most 5-on-5, you play them on the power play, and then you're going to give them PK time. I just don't know that it's a good balance for your team overall. And again, long term, we know how grueling the NHL regular season is, and then you put it into the playoffs.
And I mentioned him earlier. I know we got to go to break here, Drew, but you know, Andrew Kopp to me, great penalty killer. Really smart player. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that has the ability to – he has a shorthanded goal, doesn't he, this year?
I believe so, yeah. I could be wrong.
So, I mean, you're talking Kopp, Tanev, Lowry, Scheifele, Wheeler. You know, Morrissey's an excellent defensive defenseman. Trouba's a good penalty killer. I'm just saying
you're not concerned.
I'm not as concerned. I realize that it looks kind of bad, 25th overall in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, sometimes I think that, you know, we get too focused on – where they're ranked, and you don't really look behind the numbers.
Fair enough.
What I mean is the difference between a quote unquote good penalty kill and a bad penalty
is
kill.
A few goals.
I mean,
we could
break it down, and we could look at tape and all of that. And obviously, we haven't done that. I thought the penalty kill looked good against Carolina, and it didn't look as good against Tampa Bay. But overall, I'm just saying I don't think I have a problem with it structurally. Structurally, they're pretty sound. In can they be too passive sometimes? Sometimes, sure. But we've seen them, you know, have a turnover and turn that into a shorthanded goal. As Dave mentioned, you know, Jets are what, top three in shorthanded goals in the NHL.
Yeah, yeah. And so, just we got some insight from our listeners. Big Spence says the Jets will be just fine when Morrissey and Big Buff come back. Jeremy Stubbler says, Myers takes a penalty when 33 is playing. We don't lose a penalty killer without him. We miss Myers on the PK.
Misses in quotes there.
Yeah, sorry, I should have said that.
But Buff is a great penalty killer. I mean, you don't want to use that as an excuse, but having Big Buff in front of the net, what has he missed? He's missed 25 games this year?
Yeah, and the last
one.
And
that's a quarter of the season.
No, absolutely. Yes.
More than a quarter.
And the last one from Greg Brunette is, the reason why PK is so bad is because we lose almost every draw clean. Even when we kill it, it's a 2-minute total in our zone.
Well, and Kevin Hayes is going to help with that. He's a really good face-off guy, right? So,
well, there you go. Some feedback coming via Twitter. We want to hear more of it. At Illegal Curve is how to reach us here in studio. When we return, Dave McCarthy of NHL.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.